This is edition number 1987 of The Mardler, recorded in Aylsham on Friday the 3rd of October, 2025. Hello, you are listening to The Mardler, the weekly talking newspaper for North Norfolk. Today we bring you the week's news and views from the North Norfolk News of Thursday, the 2nd of October, 2025. My name is Kate Harris, and my fellow readers are
Adrian Allenby,
Cynthia Gosling,
and Lorna Wilson.
On the notice board today, this week the sun will rise around 7 o'clock and will set at about 6:30.
Later in the programme, the magazine supplement will include gardening guidance for the transition into the colder months, an insight into the country's first organic pool, and a return to Book Corner.
But we first turn to the main news items, which include demolition of intrusive home conversion, a call to delay vote on Norfolk and Suffolk's first mayor, the temporary closure of Miniature Railway, and the growing popularity of Norfolk's first paddle club. Let's begin with those lead stories.
Officials have told a man who converted a former police house into his dream home that he may have to knock it down. Steve Boone's two-storey property in Blakeney has attracted fury from his neighbours, who say it is a monstrous insertion on their tree-lined street. He has owned the site for at least 10 years and has knocked down much of the original property, which for generations housed the village bobby, and has applied for several variations of his original planning permission during that time. But his latest attempt to gain approval from North Norfolk District Council for building work he has already completed at the old police house has been refused by councillors. It means he may have to demolish parts of the flint-napped home, which neighbours have complained has blocked their right to light, and that it is out of place in the neighbourhood. Members of the planning committee first discussed the property last month. Councillors decided to conduct a site visit before making a decision, and the scheme returned before the committee again last week. Officers said the Langham Road home presented a complex challenge, with 15 different applications being made at the site over the course of a decade. Permission was granted for a dormer extension previously in 2022, and subsequent alterations to the plans have also been approved. The current application before them was for relatively minor changes to the previous three approved applications. This included the exterior flint napping, changes to the porch design, and a chimney to the rear. However, councillors were told to assess the building as a whole, as officers said it has transpired that the entire property had been demolished, resulting in unauthorised works. Blakeney Parish Council objected to the height and scale of the property. Dr. Victoria Holliday, the local Conservative councillor, said the developer had driven a coach and horse through planning policies, claiming the neighbouring home had lost 20% of its sunlight. She added, "The previous planning permission is a material consideration, but does this outweigh the harm?" Other councillors complained the scheme had metamorphosised over the years, which made it difficult for the council's planning team to keep track of the changes. Liz Vickers, Conservative councillor for Fakenham, said the site visit revealed the sheer brass neck of the development. However, representatives of Mr. Boone have insisted the building has not been built taller than the previously approved plans and that it is within the footprint of the original house. Ultimately, councillors voted to refuse his application. However, committee chairman Paul Heinrich admitted it was likely the developer would appeal the decision. And if an appeal is not successful or a compromise is not found, Mr. Boone could face a similar fate to West End Theatre director Adam Spiegel's Arcady home in neighbouring Clye. He battled for a decade to save his home, which was built larger than the approved plans. But ultimately, government officials sided with NNDC's planners, and Mr. Spiegel has been forced to demolish part of his home to cut it down to size.
Next year's inaugural public vote to elect a mayor for Norfolk and Suffolk should be delayed, say councillors. Members of the Green Party in Norwich want the election, due to be held in May 2026, to be delayed, even though they have selected their candidate for the contest. They say the vote should be put on hold until 2027 to coincide with a reform in the voting process for such elections. Mayoral elections are currently decided through the first-past-the-post system, the same method used in council and parliamentary elections. However, the Labour government announced in its English Devolution and Community Empowerment Bill that it intends to bring in the supplementary vote system instead. In that process, voters get a first and second preference vote. If no candidate gets more than 50% of the vote on the first two preferences, all but the top two are eliminated. The second preferences are allocated to the remaining two candidates, and the candidate with the most votes after that is declared the winner. It has previously been used in Norfolk for the police and crime commissioner elections. However, the muted change is unlikely to be enacted in time for the next May's Norfolk and Suffolk mayoral election. Greens at Norwich City Council want the authority's Labour leader, Mike Stonard, to approach other Norfolk and Suffolk councils to seek a delay until 2027. Lucy Galvin, deputy leader of the Green Group, said the supplementary vote system better reflected the preferences and values of voters and ensured the candidate had a broad base of support across the community. She said, "This is particularly important when electing a single powerful figure across a large constituency." She said, "Norfolk and Suffolk will be disadvantaged if a mayor is elected under an unrepresentative electoral system less suited for the purpose." Only two candidates have been announced for the mayoral election so far: Conservative Tim Passmore and Green Caroline Topping. The new mayor will get powers over transport, skills, strategic planning and public safety, with the government giving £34.7 million per year, a total of £1.12 billion over 30 years.
Visitors have few remaining opportunities to ride a seaside town's new miniature railway after it opened in August. The Cromer Miniature Railway is a 7.25-inch gauge railway on the outskirts of the town. Since opening to the public for the first time this summer, the experience has proven a hit with visitors. Chairman of the Cromer Miniature Railway Club, Peter Hodges, reflected on the railway's first season, saying, "We are very pleased with how the first season has gone. We've not only had lovely comments from the public, but have had lots of new members join us too." The site will welcome people on October the 25th and 28th for half-term visitors looking to take a trip for one last time this year. It currently boasts several locomotives and three carriage sets. Rides are free, though the club is welcoming donations to help fund the construction of the line. On the opening weekend, the site welcomed more than 600 visitors, with the volunteers delighted to see so many people take an interest in the railway. The Cromer Railway Club was formed in 2020 and has spent the last 5 years turning its vision into reality. Many of its members were previously involved with the Ashmanoe Light Railway, which closed in 2019. While the line will shortly close for the winter, it will return next spring. Mr. Hodges said, "We will spend the colder months working on the track and getting it ready for the next season. Weather permitting, we should be able to welcome visitors again next April." No booking is required to take a trip along the railway, and the experience is free for children and accompanying adults.
The owner of Norfolk's first dedicated paddle club has insisted he is untroubled by a surge in local competition. 1 year on from its launch in September 2024, Blazing Paddles has already attracted more than 2,500 newcomers to its courts at Saulmore Hall Farm in Reefham. Once the county's only venue for the racket sport, which is now being dubbed as the world's fastest growing, it has since ballooned in popularity. Courts have since opened in Holt, Fakenham and Norwich, prompting suggestions the Reefham business may soon face a battle to defend its serve. However, Alex Nagshinay, Blazing Paddle's founder, has backhanded these claims. "We're excited to see more courts opening and can't wait for the sport to continue its momentum in Norfolk," he said. "The data shows that even with the population to court ratio of around 3,000, there's more than enough demand to sustain everyone." Housed in a converted cowshed, Blazing Paddles features two indoor courts, coaching sessions for both seasoned players and novices, and hosts a cafe serving coffee and cake. Since last September, its courts have clocked up more than 10,000 hours of playtime. But Mr. Nagshinay says the business is looking to take things up a gear. He said, "The response in our first year has been incredible. We are proud to have built such a loyal, friendly community around the sport we love. With more courts in spring, a new focus on wellness, generous membership options, and a fully stocked club shop, 2025-26 is shaping up to be even bigger." He also hinted at further expansion on Saulmore Hall Farm, which continues to emerge as a local business hub, alongside names such as All Day Brewing and Drip Drop Bake Stop.
Police are hunting for a man who is wanted on recall to prison. Officers have appealed for help to locate Daniel Grix, who has breached his licence conditions. The 47-year-old is around 6 foot tall, of medium build, and has short, dark brown hair and hazel eyes. Grix is known to frequently visit Norwich, Bristol and Fakenham. Anyone who has seen him or knows of his whereabouts is asked to contact the police.
An inquest has opened after a woman died as a result of injuries caused by a car accident 25 years ago. Valerie Jean Stokes, 80, died at her home in North Walsham on September the 15th, 2025. On Wednesday, area coroner Yvonne Blake formally opened an inquest into her death. During a brief hearing at Norfolk Coroner's Court, Miss Blake confirmed that Miss Stokes, a retired nurse, had been born in Wisbeach and died on Monday, September the 15th. The coroner said that the cause of her death had been aspiration pneumonia and progressive dyspraxia, which had stemmed from a road traffic accident in 2000. A full hearing into her death is due to take place on February the 2nd, 2026.
It is a one-of-a-kind festival that brings ravers together for a 24/7 party. But while the revellers were dancing the night away at Houghton Festival in rural West Norfolk, not everyone was having a good time. West Norfolk Council received a noise complaint following this year's event at Houghton Hall, which is thought to be the only 24-hour festival in the country. According to Jim Moriarty, Cabinet Member for Licensing at the Authority, a horse in the nearby field was left in distress due to the repetitive bass characteristic of the house, techno and trance music the event is known for. No other complaint was received during the event, which ran from August the 7th to August the 10th. Houghton Festival has been running at the country estate since 2017. It was founded by dance music legend Grave Richards, who is one of the founders of Fabric, the renowned London nightclub. Across its 12 stages, music is played continuously day and night, giving the 24-hour party people a constant beat to groove to. It is due to return on August the 6th to August the 9th.
Forecasters have warned that a Category 5 hurricane could bring unsettled weather to Norfolk. Hurricane Humberto became a Category 5 hurricane on Saturday and could bring extreme weather to the county this week. The USA will be impacted the most, but the UK is also expecting to see fallout from the hurricane as it makes its way across the Atlantic. Met Office Deputy Chief Meteorologist Chris Bulmer said, "The situation becomes more complex later this week as tropical cyclones Humberto and Imelda, currently over the southwest Atlantic, influence our weather, increasing the risk of a deep low developing near the UK. If this materialises, we could see some very strong winds as well as further heavy rainfall Friday into Saturday, but at this time, the development and track of this system remains uncertain. We're monitoring this very closely." The forecaster added that there is a possibility of further weather warnings being issued later this week. Large parts of Norfolk are forecast to see rainfall on Friday and Saturday, with temperatures reaching highs of 17 degrees centigrade.
Our next few stories include a bus service taken over by UK Transport Group, a number of vehicles seized in a market town, and an ongoing investigation following the death of a motorcyclist.
A police probe remains ongoing after a 19-year-old was killed in a crash involving a bike and a car. Louis Hines died following the accident in Beeler Road at Hoverton at around 9:20 p.m. on Friday, September the 12th. A blue Yamaha MT-07 motorbike, a green Kawasaki GX636 motorbike, and a white Ford Focus were involved in the collision. Mr. Hines' former school, Stalham High, had issued a statement paying tribute to a determined and well-natured young man, while a GoFundMe page has been set up to raise money for funeral costs. A statement on the page, which has already raised more than £5,000, said, "On the 12th of September, our beloved Louis Hines tragically lost his life in a motorbike accident. At just 19 years old, his life was cut far too short, leaving his family and friends devastated beyond words. Louis will always be remembered as a loving son to Carrie and a devoted brother to René. Officers were encouraging people to come forward following the death, and a spokeswoman for Norfolk Constabulary confirmed inquiries remained ongoing. The rider of the Yamaha motorbike involved in the collision, who is in his 20s, was seriously injured and taken to Norfolk and Norwich Hospital for treatment, where he remains in a serious condition. The driver of the Ford Focus, a man in his 20s, was treated for minor injuries. The road was closed while emergency services attended the scene, including ambulance and air ambulance, and reopened on Saturday afternoon. Officers would like to speak to anyone who may have witnessed the collision or who has any relevant dashcam footage. Anyone with any relevant information is asked to contact the force.
All but three of Norfolk's parliamentary seats would be won by Reform UK if a general election were held tomorrow, according to a new poll. The seat-by-seat YouGov survey, based on sampling over the past 3 weeks, has Nigel Farage's party winning in Norwich North, Broadland and Fakenham, South Norfolk, Great Yarmouth, Mid Norfolk, North West Norfolk and South West Norfolk. That would mean a Conservative wipeout with Tories James Wilde, George Freeman and Jerome Mayhew losing their seats. Labour's Ben Goldsborough, Terry Jeremy and Alice MacDonald would also be ousted. Independent Rupert Lowe, who used to be in Reform UK, would also see his Great Yarmouth constituency won by his former party, according to the poll which sampled 13,000 people to ask who they would vote for if there was a general election the next day. The poll suggests that overall, Reform UK would take 311 of 650 parliamentary seats, 15 seats short of the formal winning line of 326. Labour would have 144, down 267, although Norwich South MP Clive Lewis would be one of the Labour survivors. The Liberal Democrats would have 78 seats, up 6, with North Norfolk's Stephen Acheron among them. The Greens would gain 3, taking their tally to 7, with Adrian Ramsay, who holds the cross-border seat of Waveney Valley, one of them. The Conservatives would lose 76 seats, putting them on just 45. Lowestoft, currently held by Labour's Jesse Asato, would be won by Reform UK. MRP predictions do come with a significant margin of error, and a general election is not likely to happen for 3 or 4 years. This year saw Reform UK win their first seats on Norfolk County Council, Breckland District Council, Broadland District Council and West Norfolk Council. This week they took their number on Breckland Council to 5 after Graham Middleton took Thetford's Castle ward from Labour in a by-election.
One of the region's biggest bus services has been taken over by a national transport group. Go East Anglia, which operates Connect Bus across Norfolk, Suffolk and Essex, has been acquired by Transport Made Simple, one of the UK's largest independently owned passenger transport providers. The acquisition, expected to be completed next month, will see the local bus services join Transport Made Simple's existing operations, which include the Central Connect, Flag Finders and Simmons brands. No immediate changes are planned to the services following the takeover. An agreement was reached earlier this week with Go Ahead Group, which runs Go East Anglia, and will see Transport Made Simple's fleet increase to 380 buses, coaches and minibuses. The firm's headcount will also grow to 800 members of staff. Matt Carney, Chief Executive of Go Ahead Bus, said, "We're confident that Transport Made Simple will be great new owners for Go East Anglia. Bringing together Go East Anglia's network with Transport Made Simple's existing operations will create a stronger local presence, supporting future growth in services and connectivity for passengers and the community." Transport Made Simple's Group Managing Director, Peter Nathaniel, added, "I'm delighted to welcome the drivers, engineers, cleaners and support staff from Go East Anglia into our team and look forward to building on an excellent work that is already underway in delivering sustainable, high-quality bus services across the region. Our focus is always on building strong relationships with local stakeholders to ensure that we're providing bus services which meet community needs." Transport Made Simple has said customers should continue to refer to their local bus operator's website for the latest timetable information and travel alerts.
A new NHS body formed from a cross-county merger has named its first Chief Executive Officer. The Norfolk and Suffolk ICB, Integrated Care Board, is set to be formed in April next year from the planned merger of Norfolk and Waveney ICB with its equivalent in Suffolk. Ahead of the merger, Ed Garrett has been appointed Chief Executive Designate of the new organisation. Dr. Garrett is currently the Shared Chief Executive of both Norfolk and Waveney ICB and the Suffolk and North East Essex ICB, having taken on the Norfolk and Waveney role following the resignation of Tracy Bleakley in May. It has now been confirmed that he will lead the new organisation when it goes live in April. Dr. Garrett said, "Our ambition is to create an outstanding organisation that drives with our partners meaningful improvements for the communities we serve." Chairman Designate of the NHS Norfolk and Suffolk ICB, Professor Will Pope, said, "Ed has an impressive track record of delivery and has built an excellent reputation over his 10 years as an NHS CEO. Claire Panicker, Regional Director for NHS England in the East of England, added, "This appointment will play a pivotal role in helping us to deliver the bold and ambitious 10-year health plan here in East of England." The merger of the two organisations comes as part of a major shake-up of NHS management structure led by Health Secretary Wes Streeting.
Hundreds of ex-prisoners are set to be given help finding jobs in Norfolk and Suffolk as part of a new initiative. The Future Horizons scheme connects ex-offenders leaving Norwich Prison with local employers in an attempt to support businesses with inclusive recruitment and reduce the region's skills shortage. Every month, around 120 people are released from Norwich Prison, many with the skills and experience desperately needed in workplaces across both counties. The initiative, which is being led by Norfolk County Council-owned Norse Group, launches next month. Justin Galliford, CEO of the group, said, "At Norse Group, we believe inclusive employment is about more than offering a job. It's about giving people the opportunity to transform their lives." According to the Ministry of Justice, 81% of people believe that businesses employing ex-offenders make a positive contribution to society. However, while 70% of employers would consider hiring ex-offenders with the right support, only 17% are currently doing so, according to research by the Social Market Foundation. Future Horizons aims to help bridge that gap.
A family living in a caravan in a Norfolk village have lost their battle to stay on the plot, with officials giving them 12 months to move on. Tom Harbour, his wife and two children, had been living at Malthouse Corner in Catfield since they bought the site at auction in July 2022. However, since moving there, they got in trouble with North Norfolk District Council, which said they did not have the correct permission to use the land as a residential home. They attempted to get permission by applying to turn the change of use land into a traveller site. But this was refused earlier this year on the grounds the location was remote and isolated, with a lack of nearby facilities, and fears it would have a negative visual and environmental impact. The family, who described their lifestyle as nomadic, appealed to the Planning Inspectorate, the department that presides over planning disputes, to overturn the decision. But the official has dismissed the appeal and has granted the family 12 months to comply with an enforcement notice which prevents them from living on the land.
All of Norfolk's councils have now lodged their submissions for what should happen when all the county's councils are scrapped and replaced. Great Yarmouth Borough Council became the final local authority to agree what to submit to the government as part of Labour's huge shake-up of councils in Norfolk. The reorganisation, the biggest in 50 years, would see all eight current councils abolished and replaced with one or more unitary councils, which would provide all services. Norfolk County Council wants one council. South Norfolk favours two, East and West Norfolk, while the other districts, Norwich, Broadland, Breckland, Great Yarmouth, North Norfolk and West Norfolk, want three, East, West and Norwich, known as the Future Norfolk Proposal. At a meeting on Thursday night, Great Yarmouth Borough Councils voted to endorse the three council proposal. Carl Smith, Conservative leader of Yarmouth Council, said, "These proposals offer the best way forward for our borough and our residents." The government will now consider the various proposals, and following public consultation, ministers will make a decision on what model should be put in place in Norfolk.
An uninsured vehicle was seized as part of a road safety crackdown in a market town. Police held an action day in North Walsham on Friday, September the 19th. In a few hours, officers stopped a total of 25 vehicles and only two left without being issued with a ticket. The problems included window tints that did not let in enough light, incorrect or illegal number plates, people not wearing seat belts, drivers using their phone behind the wheel, and drivers carrying an overweight load. One vehicle was seized because it did not have insurance. You are listening to edition number 1987 of The Mardler, recorded on Friday the 3rd of October 2025. Still to come are items about disputes over a holiday home's expansions, a recently opened boatyard, and schemes to improve isolation amongst the elderly. But before that, there are two miscellaneous items sent to the editor of the North Norfolk News, followed by some events for the diary.
A new book has revealed the mysterious side of Mundersley. Mundersley Ghost Stories, a collection of tales retold by author, scriptwriter and photographer Nigel Holmes, promises readers a journey through the village's haunted cottages and eerie coastal legends. The stories, gathered from local residents, offer a blend of folklore and theatrical flair. Spanning 100 pages, the book celebrates hidden histories, eccentric characters, and the timeless joy of a ghost story. Each tale is illustrated with atmospheric images that bring the spectral figures to life. The book, available on Amazon for £14.75, is aimed not just at fans of folklore, but at anyone seeking a glimpse into the peculiar. Stories range from the chilling dignity of the Long Coast Guard to the comic absurdity of Filiffy, the Phantom Farter. Holmes's latest work is more than a collection of ghost stories. It is an invitation to experience the oddities of seaside storytelling.
A lifeboat station has completed a week of events celebrating its history and life-saving service. Haysborough RNLI hosted seven events as part of the National Heritage Open Days Festival, organised by the National Trust. The events included live lifeboat operations, heritage talks and in-depth station tours, resulting in extra fundraising opportunities and heightened community engagement and awareness. Simon Tibble, visits officer at the station, said, "It is a great privilege to be associated with the people at RNLI Haysborough. The HODS event this year were really fantastic. Everyone involved, from the crew to all our guests, had a great time." The highlight of the festival was a live chat show hosted by ITV Anglia's David Whiteley, featuring interviews with long-serving crew members and current volunteers. Mr. Tibble said, "There were inspirational conversations and stories across the board, and our whole team, along with all the people who came to our events, are to be congratulated on their contributions to the success of the whole project." The station currently operates the D-Class D813, Russell Pickering, and runs a community water safety team, visitors centre and shop.
On the 7th and 8th of October, Hindringham Hall, shortlisted for the Historic House Garden Award in 2020, opens its gates to a Tudor Hall and walled vegetable garden for a leisurely afternoon of smelling roses and enjoying tea and cake beside the medieval moat. It's pumpkin picking season at Wroxham Barns. On the weekend of the 11th of October, visit Wroxham Barns to take your pick of a pumpkin in preparation for carving, decorating or making an autumnal display. Join Gary Powell and John Platten for an informative and moving evening that follows their cancer survival journeys through their poetry and creative work. This event will take place at the Sheringham Community Centre on Saturday the 11th of October. Signed copies of the author's books will be available to buy, and 10% of funds raised will go towards the Cromer Cancer Support Centre. On the 12th of October, Deepdale Farm will be hosting an introductory course to green woodworking. Throughout the session, you will learn the properties of green wood, use tools such as a pole lathe, and leave equipped with the skills to confidently make your own natural objects at home.
We turn now to this week's Mardler magazine supplement, where, as we transition from the summer heat to an autumnal chill, gardener Sarah explains ways to sustain allotments with pumpkins, whilst friend of the Mardler, Richard, recounts his experience of wildlife surveying. We also return to Book Corner for some reading recommendations to accompany a rainy day.
In the following article, friend of the Mardler, Sarah, shares her knowledge about the fruit commonly associated with October, pumpkins, by delving further beyond their Halloween time uses. Pumpkins are not just about the large, bright orange globes which start to fill the supermarket shelves ahead of Halloween. They have a much more complex history, especially when you look at them as relatives of the wider gourd family. Gourds include the non-edible varieties of fruits which have been cultivated as far back as pre-biblical times. They were grown for many uses. Their hard skins, which dry to a leather-like surface, made them perfect for food and liquid storage, decorative pots, or even musical instruments. Their unusual shapes, some snake-like and winding, some vessel-like, and others pear-shaped, make them an attractive crop to grow in our gardens today. They look especially appealing being trained up a frame structure where the fruits can be displayed more conspicuously. If you want to try your hand at a display, have a look in your local garden centre or online for some interesting seeds this coming autumn. The range widens each year and the popularity of growing gourds and pumpkins increases. Don't sow until it's a bit warmer next spring, around April time. Sow the large seeds on their sides in trays of moist compost. If lain flat, the soft seeds can easily rot before germinating. And watch how quickly they spring to life. Keep potting on until they're ready to face the outdoors once frosts are over, May or even June time. Growing pumpkins and gourds is a fantastic way to cover a large space or an allotment, suppressing weeds as they go. Should you happen to have a compost heap, they're fantastic scrambling over that, feasting on all the rich nutrients they can find. They like well-mulched soil, but once established can withstand reasonably low rain levels and thrive in heat. One note of caution. Make sure you grow the edible pumpkins away from the ornamental, hard-skinned varieties. They can otherwise cross-pollinate and create toxic squash. You will recognise this from an extremely bitter taste when eaten. You must discard immediately. Come autumn, you'll be delighted to find the fruits revealed as the leaves die back. Pop them gently on some straw or old tiles to keep the skins from getting too damp on the earth. Once lifted, keep the fruits stored in a cool, dry place to let the skins cure. They make such a lovely autumn display or provide a long-lasting and tasty food source into the colder months. Look out for flavoursome varieties such as Crown Prince with its blue skin and deep orange flesh, or Uchikikiri, an attractive smaller redskin variety. Many thanks to Sarah for another wonderful contribution to the Mardler and for continuing to share your knowledge on all things blooming.
Nestled in the village of Saxthorpe sits Britain's first DIY natural pool, built by David Pagan Butler. Void of chemicals, chlorine, and other disinfectants, these organic pools embrace natural processes, instead brimming with microorganisms that serve as natural filters and are filled with collected rainwater. After learning of a loved one's allergic reaction to a chlorine-filled swimming pool, David was enthusiastic to create something accessible, safe, and enjoyable for all, and has since built two organic pools in his own garden for his family and friends to use. Through online guides and video tutorials, David demonstrates how one can create their own organic pool on a budget. Those built in his garden range from £2,000 to £6,000, and his essential guide has garnered over 6 million views and global attention, with organic pools built in Ecuador, Colombia, and the Netherlands, to list but a few. David's organic pools have attracted a fascinating range of wildlife, from water boatmen and dragonfly larvae to birds including skylarks, wagtails, goldfinches, and on rare occasions a kingfisher spotted in the early morning light. The sloped sides of the pool are designed to allow marginal plants, emergent grasses, and sedges to grow, thus creating protection for animals to move safely in and out of the water. To maintain this diversity, David advises it is essential that blanket weed must not be able to dominate the pool. This common alga forms a dense, bright green, slimy layer on the surface and indicates high levels of nitrate and phosphate in the water caused by warm weather. Whilst impossible to remove entirely, a well-made pool with the suitable amounts of nutrients in the plant structures should strengthen the flora in fighting the unwanted alga. Daphnia, a type of water flea, which despite the name does not bite, also aid in the removal of blanket weed. This, David explains, is why the pool should not contain fish, as they eat Daphnia and other vital microorganisms. David uses a bubble pumping system, typically used in dredging ships and aquarium filters, as it can circulate large volumes of water whilst remaining safe and gentle for aquatic life. It's a self-sustaining ecosystem. What is given to the flora and fauna returns in the form of a healthy conditioned pool. Unlike regular swimming pools, the water of David's organic pool never needs to be changed. David fills his with rainwater that falls on his roof and is then collected. If you or someone you know might be interested in learning more about organic pools, you can visit David's website, www.organicpools.co.uk, or attend his on-site courses. Thank you, David, for allowing the Mardler to share an insight into your wonderful invention.
We hear now from a friend of the Mardler, Richard, who has spent the summer volunteering as a wildlife surveyor in a meadow near the North Norfolk coast. In this article, Richard recounts his sightings of summertime wildlife and the current transition into autumn. I began this voluntary work mid-July in an effort to support a recently reopened country estate dating back to the 15th century. My wife had just started working there as a gardener, rekindling her interest in formal gardens. Hearing her speak of the walled gardens, the plethora of over 1,000 varieties of roses and the wildflower meadows inspired me to delve into something new and to utilise skills that I have previously used for wildlife surveying in my own back garden. A few years ago, I had taken part in RSPB's Big Garden Watch. Alongside the common roster of house sparrows, wood pigeons and starlings, I was also fortunate enough to spot a tawny owl perched atop a telephone pole just behind the hedge. Nestled in the centre of the estate's woodland and farmland is a large flower meadow that has never been cultivated and is therefore a valuable habitat for wildlife and plants, including yellow rattle, ragged robin, and devil's bit scabious. The latter was traditionally used for treating the sores of the bubonic plague and other scabs, hence its Latin name scabere, meaning to scratch. The yellow rattle is pivotal in providing a flourishing meadow. It feeds on the nutrients of dominating grasses and allows more delicate flowers to grow. In turn, it feeds two species of moths that live in this meadow, including the rare grass rivulet. Other animals that are drawn to this environment include frogs and otters in the nearby streams and ditches that border the meadow. There's also a large range of birds I've spotted in my time there: buzzards, red kites, owls, and kingfishers. The arduous task of preserving the meadow and encouraging growth begins in August. I am tasked with cutting the flowers and grasses by hand, a tedious task on boggy ground. The cut material then has to be collected and gathered into stacks and removed from the meadow to be burnt. While this sounds counterintuitive and destructive, if left on the meadow, the material would decompose and release nutrients that would impede the growth of wildflowers in the following spring. This practice has been followed for many years prior and will hopefully continue for many years to come. Many thanks to Richard for his contribution to this edition of The Mardler.
As the leaves start to fall, the nights draw in, and the rain is the soundtrack of the day, it's an ideal time to relax indoors, wrapped in a cosy blanket with a good book. So, in this month's book corner, we have a selection of engrossing reads with an autumn theme. If you're a fan of fantasy novels, you might enjoy the diverse world of hidden magic in October Man by Ben Aronovich. This well-written, entertaining, magical mystery novella is set in Trier, famous for being Germany's oldest city. When a man is found dead, his body covered in fungal rot, the local authorities call in investigator Tobias Winter, who aims to get in, deal with the problem and get out with the minimum of personal danger and paperwork. Tobias soon links the first victim to a group of ordinary middle-aged men. Then he realises a centuries-old conflict may have been reawakened accidentally. As the rot continues to spread, the list of suspects extends to people born before Frederick the Great. Solving the case means unearthing the city's secret magical history. Hopefully, that history won't kill them first. Our next book steps back in time to an era of cosy log fires. Autumn Softly Fell by Dominic Luke is a charming and evocative novel set in Edwardian times. Abandoned by her father and left with an uncle she has never met, 8-year-old Dorothea finds herself living in a big, strange house in the middle of nowhere. She feels unwanted and wishes she could return to her old home in London. But as time passes, Dorothea becomes more and more enmeshed in her new life and begins to wonder where home really is. This captivating story about identity and loyalty, with its beautifully written descriptions, is the first book in the Brannan family saga. The End of October by Lawrence Wright is a race against time thriller. At an internment camp in Indonesia, 47 people are pronounced dead with a mysterious fever. Dr. Henry Parsons, a microbiologist and epidemiologist, is sent there by the World Health Organization to investigate. What he discovers has staggering repercussions across the globe. An infected man is on his way to join the millions of worshippers in the annual Hajj to Mecca. As international tensions rise and governments enforce unprecedented measures, Henry finds himself in a race against time to track the source and find a cure before it's too late. This poignant story is well written, expertly researched, and extremely relevant in the current climate. Of course, it's also a gripping read. And finally, here's something completely different. Harvest by Jim Crace is an unusual novel set in an unnamed village in an unknown era. As the final pearls of barley are brought in, a trio of outsiders arrives in the nearby woodland borders, and a series of events threaten Walter's village. That night, the local manor house is set on fire and the harvest blackened by smoke. But something even darker is at the heart of this story, and Walter will be the only man left to tell it. Harvest is a haunting, ominous, and interesting tale set in the past about a way of life that had endured for centuries in a remote village somewhere in England. With its lyrical depiction of landscape and season, you are quickly drawn into this simple yet compelling tale. We hope you are tempted to read some of these books. You can borrow or request all of them from your favourite audio library, such as Calibre, RNIB or Norfolk County Libraries, or even listen to them on the internet or an Alexa smart speaker.
And those items conclude this week's magazine supplement. Our thanks go to the writers of these articles for their wonderful contributions. We now return to the news to cover our penultimate selection of articles, including Bungalows for Livestock, Built Without Permission, an award for Aylsham's Garden Centre, and the growth of a Cromer publishing house.
Neighbours are up in arms over a balcony built without planning permission, at a luxury coastal holiday let. North Norfolk District Council, NNDC, has received a retrospective application for the structure at a property, which sleeps 10, beside the River Glaven at Clye, near Holt, and the boardwalk that runs beside it. But people living close to Riverside House, off the High Street, near the village's windmill, are fuming after an existing balcony was extended over the roof of a single-storey annex. They say it overlooks other properties, and a noise from the five-bed holiday let has increased since it was built in April. One local said, "We were walking along the boardwalk in April and were surprised, to say the least, to come across a party, complete with singing, taking place on the balcony. It spoilt a lovely walk, and I can only imagine what it must have been like for the neighbours." Another objector added, "Much of the appeal of Clye is its peaceful character, which is being eroded when it should be protected. The light and noise coming from this balcony will inevitably cause disruption to nesting birds in the adjacent reed beds." A neighbour said, "The size is out of proportion to the house itself, with the potential for increases in parties and resultant noise, which would disturb the numerous neighbours, those using Clye Harbour, and would create light pollution. It also has implications for the abundant wildlife in the marshes which this balcony overlooks." Clye Parish Council described the addition as out of place with the potential to be intrusive. A planning statement on behalf of owner Rob Webster said, "Given the stunning views to the west, extra balcony space was utilised as a continuation of the existing balcony space, to provide somewhere to sit and enjoy the views." It added, "The property is booked through a lettings company and tight rules have been placed on the numbers of people on the balcony at any time." According to the property portal Rightmove, the house was sold for £1.65 million in 2018. A decision is expected from NNDC later this year.
A Norfolk boat builder who began working on the Broads at 15 has opened his own boatyard. Ben Knight, now 31, left his job as manager of Southgate's boatyard in Horning to set up his own traditional boat building and marine care business, Stalham Marine Services. Based at Stalham Staithe, the company offers a range of services from wooden boat building to maintenance, repairs and storage. Mr. Knight began his career at the age of 15, working for Waveney River Centre and City Boats in Norwich. He went on to train as a boat builder at the International Boat Building Training College, IBTC, in Lowestoft in 2014, before joining Southgate's boatyard, where he worked for more than a decade. "Starting up my own is the best thing I've ever done," Mr. Knight said. "The beauty of this site is that there is a wet shed in Stalham, owned by Paul Richardson, which he has around 100 traditional wooden boats in." "There comes a point with wooden boats where they're not worth repairing. The idea is that we make maintenance and repairs affordable for customers, offering them absolutely every service." Despite fears from some Broads boatyards, Mr. Knight says traditional wooden boat building is not a dying industry. The boat building college in Alton Broad, where Mr. Knight trained, closed in December last year. He said there is a desperate need for training centres to encourage more youngsters to pursue careers within the industry. "There is a need for training because we're going to get to a point where those of us working in the industry are going to get older," he added. "You need younger people coming through and apprentices around the workshop."
Farmers are battling with the Norfolk Council over a collection of pig bungalows erected without permission. North Norfolk District Council has issued an enforcement notice to D.W. Philby and Son, which operates in Aldborough, demanding they be taken down. Officials said several large bungalows have emerged at the farm, but they do not have the correct permission due to their size and because they are used to house livestock. In the notice, officers say the landowner has not demonstrated the huts will not cause an adverse effect to nature sites nearby. D.W. Philby and Son has been told to permanently dismantle and remove the bungalows from the land within 3 months of the notice issued on September the 1st. But the family-run farming firm has appealed to the Planning Inspectorate, the government department that presides over planning disputes, to block the move. The row over pig bungalows has emerged while the farming firm is still waiting for the council to make a decision on a planning application to demolish 4 units and replace them with 2 new buildings to rear 1,900 pigs. However, the application is still yet to be decided 5 years later. It has received dozens of complaints from villagers and the parish council. People worry that nearby nature site Scarrow Beck is at risk from pollution due to runoff of animal manure. Aldborough and Thurgerton Parish Council has objected, calling the proposal a wholly inappropriate intensive industrialised development. The planning inspector will review the appeal before issuing a decision in the coming months.
A national publisher is continuing to make waves from its base on the Norfolk coast. Salt Publishing is based in Cromer after relocating to the seaside town in 2011 and will celebrate 15 years in the area in May 2026. Founded in Cambridge in 1999, Salt has published more than 1,500 writers worldwide and is widely regarded as one of the UK's leading independent literary presses. Chris Hamilton-Emery, co-founder and director of Salt Publishing, said, "Cromer has been more than a backdrop, it's become part of Salt's identity. The light, the sea, the sense of being on the edge of things looking outwards, all of that speaks to the kind of books we publish." Since moving to Cromer, Salt has received national recognition, including 2 Booker Prize nominations, and has published authors such as Michael RDT, Carice Davies, Paul McVeigh, Alison Moore, and Will Wiles. Its fiction list will expand in 2026 to include Tibor Fischer, Michelle Loveridge, and Erica Wagner. The company also produces the respected annual anthology Best British Short Stories, edited by Nicholas Royal. Salt has maintained close ties with East Anglia's literary community, publishing a number of authors from Norwich and the broader region. DJ Taylor, author and critic, said, "Salt are not only East Anglia's leading independent publisher, they are rapidly evolving into a major player on the British literary scene, producing books for quality that puts many a commercial giant to shame." The business remains family-run, with Mr. Hamilton Emery's wife Jennifer overseeing finance and editorial, and their daughter Kirsty working part-time in publicity. Salt has also benefited from support from North Norfolk District Council and was a founding partner in Publishing East, a regional project funded by Arts Council England. Mr. Hamilton Emery said, "It's unusual to find a literary press of this scale outside metropolitan centres, but we believe culture belongs everywhere."
Older people across the county are receiving doorstep support through a scheme offering home visits. Age UK Norfolk is highlighting its home visiting service, which delivers practical advice and companionship to people in the comfort of their own homes. The service aims to help those who may find it difficult to travel due to mobility issues, health concerns, or lack of transport. Emma Harkness, Head of Information and Advice at Age UK Norfolk, said, "Our home visits mean that older people don't have to struggle alone with important paperwork or financial worries. We also know that a friendly face on the doorstep, a chat, or support getting out and about can make a huge difference to well-being." The scheme offers help with welfare benefit applications, lasting power of attorney forms, and general advocacy. It also includes a money MOT for household paperwork, digital support, and a face-to-face befriending service. The home visits are supported by Age UK Norfolk's helpline and befriending service, as well as community advice sessions held in libraries and hubs across the county.
A garden centre in a market town has been named as the Commercial Building of the Year at a national awards ceremony. Aylsham Garden Centre on Norwich Road won the prestigious title at the Rural and Industrial Design and Building Association, RIBDA, Awards. AC Bacon Engineering, a business based in Hingham, which recently helped construct a new building on the site, were the firm that chose to enter the centre into the category. In a post on social media, the Aylsham Garden Centre team said they were absolutely delighted to receive the award. The ceremony, which took place last Friday, was held at the Concord Conference Centre in Manchester. To celebrate the win, the Garden Centre team is giving away a £50 voucher. The competition, which will close on Sunday, can be entered on its Facebook page.
A restaurant in North Norfolk has been named among the best in the UK. Each year, TripAdvisor celebrates travellers' favourite restaurants based on ratings and reviews collected over 12 months. Out of 8 million listings, fewer than 1% achieve the best of the best milestone. Marmalade's Bistro in Sheringham ranked 5th in the country for best date night spots. The bistro has been a firm favourite in the coastal town for more than 20 years. With only 8 tables, it provides an intimate environment and freshly cooked food, which is prepared to order by the owners. A spokeswoman for TripAdvisor said, "Marmalade's is a small, charming husband and wife run restaurant in a beautiful seaside town. It is perfect for romantic meals, special occasions, and family gatherings. The food is homely, yet elegant, and the wine list is extensive, with something special to suit all budgets."
The Norfolk Broads have been named among the UK's best spots for a family break. The Times has compiled a list of the top family-friendly weekend breaks to make the most of before the year is over. From the Scottish Highlands to Cornwall, several locations around the UK made it into the final 14. A spot in the idyllic and rural Norfolk Broads is among the top picks. According to the Times, Hall Farm in Horning nails the family-friendly weekend break. Located outside the village, close to the Ant and Bure, visitors can stay in a bell tent or a quaint cottage. Hall Farm Lake is popular for anglers, and there is indoor entertainment too for rainy days, including a pool table, table tennis, table football and board games. Nearby is Bewilderwood Adventure Park, Bure Valley Railway and Wroxham Barns, where little visitors can pet the goats and donkeys. A rainproof break at Centre Parks in Elvedon also made the cut, with a range of indoor and outdoor activities to keep the family entertained.
Our last few articles include items on Mannington's Book Bash, RNLI's Busy Summer, and an upcoming astrological event.
Shooting stars will light up Norfolk skies during a meteor shower. The Draconid meteor shower happens when the Earth passes through the debris of comet Giacobini-Zinner. This phenomenon occurs in October and can be seen from the Northern Hemisphere. This year, the meteor shower will be active between October the 6th and October the 10th, with the peak coming on October the 8th. Most meteor showers are best seen in the early hours of the morning, but the Draconid is clearest in the evenings, just after nightfall. Royal Museums Greenwich has said anyone hoping to catch a glimpse should head to a remote area with dark skies, an unobstructed horizon, and very little light pollution. There will be a full moon on October the 8th, which is unfortunate, as it means the sky will be brighter than normal at the time of the shower. Make sure there are no direct sources of light in your eyes so that you can fully adapt to the local conditions and ensure that fainter meteors become visible, an expert from the museum said. There's no advantage to using binoculars or a telescope. Just look up to take in the widest possible view of the sky.
A hit book festival is returning to a historic Norfolk venue for the third time this weekend. The acclaimed Mannington Hall Book Bash will take over the venue from Thursday to Sunday. Curated by City Bookshop, The Book Hive, it will be a weekend filled with events. The festival works to bring internationally renowned writers, poets, sports stars, performers, comedians, and foodies to a rural Norfolk community. The 2025 bill is topped by best-selling authors, including Sarah Perry, Natalie Haynes, Adam Buxton, Esther Freud, Monica Ferrier-Tinter, TJ Clark, Ben Youngs, Nigel Planer, and Kiadietto Kanner Mason. This year, the bash will be bigger and better than ever before, featuring a special program, Mini Mannington, for children. Henry Leitch, owner of the Book Hive and organiser of the bash, explained, "To increase the local impact of the bash, we're bringing 400 local primary school children to the festival for a morning of their own events. This will be with award-winning author Guy Bass. We are also sending poet laureate Simon Armitage to Aylsham High School to perform a special show for students."
Haysborough RNLI water safety team has been busy working on the Broads this summer. The team joined forces with the Broads Authority, Norfolk Fire Service, and the Police Broads Beat to help people stay safe on the water. They have visited 9 locations, including Reedham and Somerleyton, and spoken to more than 300 people. The aim of these events was to give people the knowledge and confidence to stay safe on the water. Daniel Buck, Broads Authority Ranger for the rivers Yare and Wensum, said, "Boat safety isn't just about rules. It's about respect for the water, for the wildlife, and for each other." Philip Smith from RNLI Water Safety at Haysborough Lifeboat Station added, "Our 4 main messages are stay afloat, stay in touch, stay put, and stay alert."
A 50p coin is up for sale for almost £20,000 in Norfolk. The Royal Mint produced almost 25 million Benjamin Bunny 50p's in 2017. It was the first UK coin to feature Benjamin Bunny, the cousin of Peter Rabbit, in the popular children's books by Beatrix Potter. The coin was released as part of a series celebrating Potter's work. It was designed by Emma Noble and depicts Benjamin dressed in his signature brown jacket and oversized tam o' shanter cap. An image of the monarch Queen Elizabeth II appears on the other side. As there are so many of these coins in circulation, they are not generally considered rare and are worth a few pounds at most. But this has not stopped one eBay seller based in Cromer from listing theirs for sale for £19,086.68, or best offer.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of The Mardler, with readings from the North Norfolk News. If you have any comments or queries, you can contact our listener liaison officer, Imogen Waterson, on 01263 587 610.
Perhaps we should just mention that if you have a smartphone, tablet or computer, or know someone who has, you can listen to this and other editions online at mardler.org.uk. You can also use an Alexa smart speaker, a variety of smartphone apps, or even a telephone call to listen. Find out the details on our website, mardler.org.uk.
We rely on receiving your returned memory sticks and pouches so that we can continue to send you new editions each week. So please remember to return the pouch and memory stick promptly, making sure to reverse the address label first.
The sound engineer today was Richard Wilson, and editing and producing this issue was Astrid Welfare. Our colleagues in the copying and dispatch room join us in wishing you the best of health, and we look forward to joining you again in a week's time. But for now, it's
cheerio! Cheerio.